It's time for Cutting Edge Consciousness with Freeman Michaels and Barnett Bain. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with my co-host.
Good morning. It's Barnett Bain. I always save my cough for when we're on air.
Yeah, do you have one?
I do. There we go.
Oh, thank you. That is so gracious of you.
Well, you know, I just want to give everyone a heads up. They're driving to work, and bringing them right out of there, right out of the behind the wheel.
So. That's it?
Yeah. It's good to be here this morning.
Fantastic.
So Barry, how are you?
I am.
That's enough.
He's good.
That's enough. So we were talking this morning on the way in. We were talking this morning about how good it feels to be doing this show.
It feels so good.
Doesn't it feel great?
Though I have to tell you, when we have technical challenges, I hear from the part of me that panics a little. Just a little.
We had some technical challenges.
We did.
Morning, and we had some a couple of weeks ago, too.
Oh, brutal. Yeah. Brutal. You know, I always attributed the technical challenges to me not being here. But
no,
the
I
funny
thought it was Mercury retrograde.
Okay, well, let's go. Either interpretation is fine, but I like mine. But
now you're here. Yeah, and so there's
well, see,
now
the,
you're
this
here.
Is, this is the illusion in my head that I can do something about it. I know nothing about this equipment. But I always feel like I could fix
I know
it.
Where it is.
You're good. You
and I know who to call, but they never answer.
That's right.
They never pick up.
Oh, that's funny.
So
what the heck were we talking
about?
We're
not
this
complaining, though, folks.
No, no, no.
We were actually talking about how much we love doing this
show.
Oh, that's
right. Yes, we do.
We were talking about. We actually had a very serious subtext buried very deeply in this conversation, so you're going to have to dig for it with us. But we were appreciating how much we love to do this show, and we were appreciating what a flow it is and how effortless it is. And how it now some of you are
mostly
mostly
flow.
Some of you are hopefully a very few of you will disagree with this, but we were acknowledging to ourselves how in line with our passions and our gifts and talents this broadcast gig is.
Absolutely,
how much fun it is and how flowing it is, and that when we get in this groove, we are open to. Receive this flow state, and then the whole deal is to turn around. It's almost like a martial artist. You turn around. I know you're doing the two-step these days. You do that two-step, and you pass it on. It comes in, and we pass it on to our listeners.
And there's a criteria here for choices in my life that I have, and I know you have, begun to listen to. We've said before, the criteria is it has to be fun. There's certain ways in which...
Struggle-free.
Yeah.
That's usually a hint that there's other agendas going on.
Well, and it doesn't mean that elements of struggle don't come in, but it's how that struggle is processed and how we're able to move through it that allows us to have a greater sense of... there's something reliable. So we were talking this morning about...
Commerce.
Well, we were talking about commerce, but we were talking about what tools we've come to rely on. For me, my practices are very reliable. So, for example, yoga is very reliable. I can take things to the yoga mat, and I know that
we
it's
were
a
talking
way,
about that.
Well, we were talking about it in a different context. So I'll get to where we were talking about. I shifted the conversation slightly. Sorry about that. I'm trying to get to somewhere. I'm really trying.
Where do you want to go?
Here's where I want to go. In simple terms. Hmm. We were talking about feeling like we could handle what is seemingly coming at us. Of course, we know we're generating it, or we're very involved in the creating and the co-creating of it. And these things that we can rely on, okay? And this criteria for the things I want to put my energy into, that they're fun, that they're generous, that there's this element of service, that I'm creating value. That's something I really want to orient. Is there any notes? Get back to the topic, sacred commerce. I know what we're talking about today, Barnett. I'm a trained professional. Anyhow,
don't try this at home.
No, well, then I'll just sum it up. So that's how I want my business life to be, too.
Yeah.
I don't want to be pushing so hard to, you know, earn a dollar. And I come from a particular tradition many of us do in this country, the Protestant work ethic, where everything has to be, you know, work is work. It's hard. It's a struggle. And I have shifted to where that is not what I want my work to be about. I want it to be an opportunity to share my gifts in the world.
Some of that formula for succeeding or for trying to meet the challenges of the world comes out of a conditioning that is not directly connected into finding a way to connect your talents and your gifts and then finding a way to give them. When we are connected into giving them, very often the flow state is invoked. And it's not as easily found when we are taught and when we're conditioned and when we are trained by our culture that life is a battle.
You do what you have to do to
make a living.
Yeah.
And you reserve your flow and your joy for your vacations, one or two weekends a year, and occasionally on a Sunday afternoon after you've mowed the lawn.
That's right. After you've worked really, really hard.
But there is an entirely different model that has to do with being a servant leader. It has to do with leading with your talents and your skills and your passions and your joys, and then when you connect with that and you give it, we find that we're supported in the world to do that even more. And that is plugging into something that we're not the first to refer to in this language, the gift economy.
And to that point, we'd love to invite our wonderful guest who has oh so much to say about this to the
we
show.
Hope
oh no
no we
know.
I happen to
Come
know
on.
For I ha- well, we're I happen to know for sure. That
for sure.
Do. But, you know, I don't take anything for granted.
Okay, go ahead. What's coming on?
I want to welcome our very special guest. I say that often on this show, but this time I mean it.
What is with him today, Barry? I don't know. Don't answer that.
Somebody spiked my tea.
That's right.
I have my very dear friend with us this morning, Betty Spruill. Who is calling in. She's not in studio, but she's calling in from, I think it's North Carolina, or maybe South, but we'll ask her in a minute. Betty is a, where do we start with her? She's a management consultant and an entrepreneur and a public speaker, captivating, I can vouch for that, and a writer and a coach and a trainer, one of the innovators at the leading edge of the personal growth movement. She's an inspiration. She was a vice president for LifeSpring at one point, and we are thrilled to have her here in her most recent incarnation as a teacher and leader and dear friend, and oh yeah, by the way, founder of Yes, Y-E-S-S. She's going to talk with us about all of that and about sacred commerce. So how is that for a ramble of an introduction, Betty?
It's very good. Thank you, Barnett.
Well,
I'm really pleased to be here. I'm in North Carolina.
In North Carolina, right? And we're pleased to have you here in Southern California joining us on Cutting Edge Consciousness. Let's talk a little bit about sacred commerce.
In North Ventura County.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about sacred commerce because I love the term, and you, of course, coined the term, at least to my knowledge. And it means a lot about sort of what Barnett and I are talking about, a new way of orienting towards work and business.
Yes, and I borrowed the term.
Oh, beautiful.
From someone else. Yes. But when I saw it, it made sense to me in a way that it brought together what my life's work was about and also the commerce part of life. Quite often I find people who, they have this battle going on, especially when we call ourselves spiritual. There's a spiritual and then there's commerce. And as I started to study commerce, just the orientation or the understanding of commerce led me to say that the sacred shows up in everything because we already are sacred. And even commerce, which has to do with relatedness and relationships. And if our relationships aren't sacred, then there's not much joy, fulfillment, or possibility in anything that we do. And then it's taken the whole notion of exchange, which is what commerce is about. And what kind of offer am I to the world?
That's a beautiful question.
Yeah, and the offer that I am, quite often we come to the marketplace, especially with what can I get. And as long as I'm coming with what can I get, there will be disparity between the joy and fulfillment that I'm wanting and what I'm having. So the question becomes, you know, what's my offer? Which, you know, just last week or 2 weeks ago, I was in Mexico working with a client. And they are architects. And they were design, which is an important part of life, just design. But what do I design from? Am I designing from the past, or am I designing for what's wanted and needed in the future?
Great question.
And it takes a particular kind of observer with a set of distinctions to be in that kind of question. You know, what's wanted and needed in the future? Like 20, 30 years ago, who knew the Internet would have the impact that it's having on our lives today?
Absolutely. There is a basement to this question. There's the main floor, the second floor, but there is a basement to this question. Because very often we find with the people that talk to us on this show, and sometimes there is a preoccupation with the form of things. How is it going to look like? What will be the expression of my gifts? Yes, I have talents, but I'm not sure what they are. And so, how can I get ahead of everybody else and figure out what is the form going to be? And it's also very much more empowering to go into the basement of that question and say, well, rather than figuring out, and I think this is what you're getting to, we didn't know there was going to be an Internet years back. The qualities of the Internet are that they create community and connections, and they allow people to be in touch with what matters to them and to others, and that there are certain freedoms that are afforded by the Internet. And those qualities live in the basement down below at the level of function, below the form of the Internet. They pre-existed the Internet. And when we can be in touch with those basement questions, what are we really after as humans?
Then the form takes care of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
With some design.
With some design. And that's the critical piece because you have to meet it.
Yeah. And again, meet it not from, is this other thing I think today is an important conversation to be having. You know, as long as I'm living in a dual world, as if the world is happening without people observing in a particular way and then bringing that world forth, mm-hmm. it feels like something is happening without us people.
Mm. It feels as though things are happening to us and that we are not creating it, that we are not participants.
It.
Nothing happens to us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, just using the Internet again as an example, and we can use any great design. People had a way of listening, which I heard you mention before, mm-hmm. had a way of listening, had a way of observing so that they could be in on something that the rest of humanity wasn't seeing. So as I see it, most of us, especially in the marketplace, we're catching up with what only a few designers have designed. And to be the kind of observer, to be the kind of listener, to be the kind of witness that can allow something to emerge is as an offer to humanity that takes in the breakdowns, the frustrations that people might encounter in the evolution of life itself. I said, and you can use your gifts and talents, because we don't design in isolation. It's a kind of way, like, I'll use your show as an example. As I was listening to the two of you speak, I'm going, now, who wouldn't want to spend a day listening to the two of you?
You can come back anytime you want, Betty.
You should speak. Call Sandy and have that conversation.
But it's just, well, we're so busy in our lives. We're so caught up in, like you said, trying to make a living.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is what I say to people. And again, that's the wrong thinking.
That's,
you know,
right.
I don't need to make a living because I'm already alive. I'm already living. But how do I earn income?
It's quite a bridge of belief that one has to cross. And
yeah.
The tricky thing about this particular bridge is that it doesn't connect up to the far side. You get to a certain point in the bridge, and then there is a gap, and you have to leap.
Can I say something about bridges?
Yeah.
We have to bridge to a commercial.
That was a beautiful segue, Freeman.
Sorry.
You are a skilled professional.
All right, listen.
We are going to pay a couple of bills,
that's,
and then
right.
We're going to be right back with Betty Sproul, and she's going to give us some Sproul's tools on how to leap across that bridge. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we are back on Cutting Edge Consciousness. This is Barnett Bain with Freeman Michaels and our guest Betty Sproul, calling in from North Carolina.
Got that right.
I did get that right, didn't I?
Beautifully done.
I've been studying. I've been taking notes. So before we broke, Betty, we were talking about the distinction between feeling that one has to earn a living and struggle for a living, and the what happens when you cross that bridge of belief. And on the far shore, there is an entirely different reframing. We understand that we are already living, that it is a gift, and that when we're dialed into what can we give more so than what we can get, we are supported by all that is. Life kind of happens to us, but it requires a reframing, and that can be scary. So what can you offer our listeners to that?
Yes, well, number one is to be mindful. This is a great term I like, mindful, that as the observers, as the interpreters of life, we are, in the moment of interpreting, generating, bringing forth, or creating that life.
Mm. That as we look at it, nothing is objective, you're saying. It is all subjective. We are assessing our world, and we are making it meaningful, and that is per every individual.
And the lens is our unique lens that mm-hmm. has, it's important, at least for me, to know even some of the ways that my own perception may distort or shift that which I'm looking at.
Yes, and that's what the quantum physics people say.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
if you observe, you're shaping. And we've gotten away from that in this whole notion of the notion of duality.
Mm-hmm.
It looks as if something is coming towards me, like the world, versus it's coming from me through my lens, my interpretations, my meanings. And so one of the first steps is to become aware and begin to become the kind of observer that can observe yourself observing.
Fabulous.
And in the moment of observation, see what shows up. And then it's like the Buddha, which is one of my taglines, turning arrows into flowers. As he was sitting and meditating one day, it looked as if all these arrows were coming towards him. And when he got there, were coming from him via his consciousness. The arrows turned into flowers and fell at his feet.
That's a heck of a conscious reframe right there. Because we were talking about reframing so that we can see things in a different from a different perspective. That's a tremendous reframe.
That's an understanding of all of the calibration tools that we have used to filter everything that's incoming.
Yeah.
Our beliefs and
absolutely.
Our thoughts and our choices and our decisions and our attitudes and our feelings. And What would you add to that, Betty?
Yes, and what I do is I ask people, not like this is the truth, but mm-hmm. like the way of interpreting the world, mm-hmm. is that you begin to see yourself as the author mm-hmm. of everything in your life, and that there are no accidents, and that, in fact, the only thing that could be in your life is what's there because you, as a particular character in your narrative, can only have that. And so instead of trying to change all the characters in your life or the circumstances and the conditions in your life, you become like a great author, Macbeth, let's say. Mm-hmm. Macbeth had many, many characters. And there were certain themes throughout most of his work, especially the tragedy. Mm-hmm. And when we can start to observe and notice the narratives of our own life, we can see that we are, in fact, authoring the circumstances, the conditions, our reactions, our beliefs, and all of it. And that as the author, I'm not reauthoring because just trying to fix something, but every moment I'm authoring life.
It's beautiful.
And with that, it takes it takes rigor and discipline, which most people don't have.
Mm. People get caught up. They get reactive. I mean, what you're saying.
Well, there's also. I'm sorry.
I have this image as I hear you speaking. I have this image of waking up in the morning and staggering into the bathroom and looking into the mirror and seeing this guy there and saying, "God, who put that guy there?"
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And getting angry at the mirror.
Yes.
And there's also the element of the many me's and these characters that are within me and these storylines that I've played out. I mean, the storylines are patterned, at least in my experience they are. And so I can, at this moment in my life, as I start to go down a particular storyline, a particular narrative, as you're saying, I'm aware. I know the outcome, right? I know this dance well.
You're familiar with your trails. With your habits.
So there's an opportunity there, again, with this observer to go, wow, do I really want to play that out? And I think what we're talking about is then we've dimensionalized it to where there's other opportunities to, let's say, choose a different trail or a different path.
So I have a question for you, Betty.
Yeah, but the only way you can choose a different path is to own that you're the author of every path.
I love it.
You see, then once I'm the author, there comes with it a certain set of peace, serenity, and a kind of commitment to stay present and awake to what I'm offering. But the moment I become a victim of anything, then I'm saying that something external to me is authoring my life. And that's me authoring something else authoring my life.
Yeah. And that's a bumpy ride.
It is.
So what is it? Well, let me reframe this question. Mm-hmm. When someone takes full authority for their lives and absolutely lives into the ownership of that I am the author of the whole thing, at that moment there is an experience of it's such a risk. There is such a risk because now we either go back to what was or we go blindly into what will be. Yes, supported by what can I give and what can I bring to it out of who I am, but there's still enough of these trailing bits of who I was that assesses it from a perspective of risk. So what is it about risk, Betty, that is so exhilarating?
What's great about risk is innovation.
Mm.
Without risk, there's no innovation.
Yeah.
And it's in the moment, the risk, those parts of our lives where we experience frustration, any kind of frustration, that's where the juice is. Mm-hmm. That's where the power is, to learn to be with frustration, to learn to be with disappointment. Because all disappointment is an assessment that we make. There's no such thing called disappointment anywhere. It's how I'm interpreting the world that would have me assess it as disappointing. The same thing, I interpret the world in such a way that would have me assess it as successful. But we want to take those moments of risk and frustration and be aware and experience it fully because as we know, once you experience something fully, it disappears. And what's left is a clearing or space where I, the author, can now declare and act on my authorship. Authority, I like the word that you use, Barnett, authority. Because authority and authenticity and authorship, all those words play in together in a nice way. Where I become the generator, the source of life, again, in a way that some days, you know, with my own life personally. I'm here with my mother, who's 93 years old, and we were out shopping this morning. And I wanted to grab her and say, let's go, it's hot out here, let's just go, I'm so hot. And I stopped and could, for, you know, be with her, 93-year-old woman, out here moving through the heat, trying to get a pair of pants that she can wear on Saturday to a party we're going to. And in that moment, I felt such peace and connection that I just slowed down and said to myself, I didn't say it to her, but whatever you need and whatever you want this day, I'm giving to you.
That's beautiful.
And we got through it, but it's that kind of awareness to, in terms of connection and interconnection. And I, you know, I don't know, Barry, but Barnett, I'll say this about you, which is one of the reasons I wanted to speak with you today. You've extended that to me ever since I met you, which is a kind of seeing, a kind of, it's like I see you, I'm here. And I find that the more I can be present to presence itself, opportunities show up, big ones, small ones. But I'm not out trying to grab something. I'm present to what's needed, what's wanted right here in this moment. And then I can begin to design a future from the future versus trying to design something to have something that I already have.
Yeah, that perspective is more reliable than the perspective that things ought to be a certain way. And I think one of the things, this is Freeman speaking, by the way, and one of the things one of the parts of this, moving back into the business framework, is that innovation is part of business today. And companies that can't innovate in this very fast-changing world are going to be in trouble. So, you know, from an individual standpoint, looking at what does it take to be able to handle and respond versus react to whatever is, in essence, seemingly coming at us, there's an element of being able to be with discomfort. There's an element of risk, of being really even excited, let's say, about uncertainty. And then there's tools. There's a certain sense of character and maybe even values that we can rely on in terms of responding, again, versus reacting to what's coming up or seemingly coming up in our experience.
I want to jump in here because before we have only a limited amount of time, and so I'll say before we go any further that we want you to come back here, Betty, and next time in studio, so we have you here with us. But what you're speaking to in large measure is authorship, claiming the authorship of one's own life and what happens then. And you've alluded to this, not in this language, but you've alluded to what happens then as you begin to live into your destiny. But it is a destiny claimed that is self-chosen. And you will be in Southern California very soon presenting a program called Living in Mastery that addresses many of these topics and more. And I want you to speak a little bit about that. And I also want to talk about our mutual good, beautiful friend, Ray Blanchard, and Spectrum.
Okay. Again, well, Living in Mastery is, of course, I've been doing all over the world for the past 25 years. And what it's designed to do is to have people begin to experience themselves as the author of life versus someone that life is happening to. And we have processes, it's experiential, it's engaging, it's involved. And five principles, if I can say them real quickly, is to experience, my experience, which has to do with being present, it has to do with communication, because we're constituted by the language we live in. And we began to design and develop language that brings forth the world versus language that speaks as if the world is happening to us.
That's a fantastic distinction.
And then the third part is a willingness to be responsible for everything. Meaning, and we distinguish responsibility from obligation, because obligation produces a certain mood. But what is responsibility?
So you're talking about being able to have the tools to respond to the challenges of life.
Yes, and that has to do with how you identify yourself. See, as soon as you identify yourself as the author, then you can begin to look at life in a way, and also a deeper understanding of some of the higher, I call them higher truths, or universal laws. So we study those. We play around with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not just some new age, nothing against new age, but new age thinking.
It's now age.
It's just some perennial thought that goes all the way back to the very beginning of, you know, what it is to think, what it is to create. And then we ask people to develop principles. You talk about values. But, you know, what are the principles by which I'll live my life? And where's my own integrity in living a life worth living? And what is it that I will never sell out on? Because the moment I sell out and have no integrity, the world becomes a complete and total mess.
So what are the lines that I will and will not cross? And this... We only have 1 minute left on the broadcast. I want people to know where they can find out more about Betty Sproul and Living in Mastery, the website, and then also I want to talk a little bit about our good friend Ray Blanchard and Spectrum.
Okay. Well, they can find out more about this particular course at 323-434-3429. And Maggie is the woman who's sponsoring me down there in Southern California.
So you can also find out more about this on our Facebook page, people.
We'll
put this up on our Facebook page.
Yes, and my Facebook page as well, Betty J. Sproul. And then Ray Blanchard.
Oh, I love Ray. Hey, Ray, if you're listening, get
Ray
in here and say hello to us.
And Ray also has courses or a company down there in Southern California called Spectrum Life Design.
www.spectrumlifedesign, isn't that it?
That's it, yeah.
www.spectrumlifedesign.com. I can personally attest to the gift and genius of Ray Blanchard. So I urge all of our listeners to check that out. Do yourselves a favor.
All right, and with that, we have to take a break, but Barnett and I will be back.
We're going to talk about Betty behind her back.
Will.
I
Betty,
noticed we were not invited to the party. I'm just saying.
No, I want you to know you were invited. We have the date. I told you May 31st.
To the party with your mom.
Oh, the party with my mom. Come on. I'm in here cooking some coffee.
We went out. We bought pants. I didn't get to. I'm just saying. I just don't think I forgot that.
With that, Betty, thank you so much for spending the time with us
today.
Love
you, Betty.
Okay.
And
bye.
For those of you listening, stay tuned. We'll be right back here on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we're back here on Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with Barnett Bain. We were just speaking with Betty Sproul. Amazing conversation. Fantastic stuff about authoring your own life. Really becoming the author of your own life.
I just want to say that Betty is one of the more treasured friends in my life.
Mm.
And her to experience her guiding this Living in Mastery curriculum that she presents is nothing short of stunning, because it comes from such a open heart and such an open mind and such a gracious and giving place.
Yeah.
And there is so much poetry in this woman that we really need to have her back in studio I urge people, if they have an opportunity, to follow up.
Yeah, so much time. I mean, time flies when we have great guests on. But the idea of choosing the principles and values to live by.
This is character. What character is.
It's so important. And choosing them when they don't align with our conditioning. In other words, choosing for ourselves. This point of maturity where we come to say...
Say more about that.
Well, there, my orientation for most of my life, even if I thought I was doing something, you know, sort of that I was doing my own individual thing, it was very much in the context of what
sort of a hand me down.
It was confined to the boundaries of good and bad, right and wrong that I learned growing up, which is fine. It's not a problem with that. That's all appropriate developmentally, but there comes a point when I'm willing to risk, you know, leaving that. Moving off in various moments, these little touchstones, these little points of reference where I sort of blow out my own box, as it were, and had these experiences that showed me, reflected to me, that there was more, there was opportunity.
And that there are certain lines that you will or will not cross that may or may not be in accordance with the hand-me-down thinking.
But that's right. That's the big piece.
The degree to which... First of all, the ownership, the understanding and the ownership of what those lines are, and then the degree to which we live within those boundaries,
That's it.
We allow those values to be the compass headings of our life. That is the degree to which we have character. So character, we can't have character. Why are you kicking me around there?
I do that.
We don't have character until we have values to live by, and then the degree to which we live by our values is illustrates the depth of our character. So she is masterful at guiding us to the discovery of what those values are currently and what they can be.
And there's a piece of that as well. When we come to understand that there's something that I hold as important, it's almost what we started the show with. Like, there's a criteria that we know, you and I both know, tends to generate an element of flow. And it's a generosity of spirit. It's a
response to one question.
Yeah.
I'll ask it of you.
Go ahead.
What were you born to do?
That's it. That's it.
And that is not a question that people can simply reach out and pluck the answer off a shelf.
I have
for
an answer.
There is an answer, but it is generally buried in the hand-me-down thinking.
No, that's right.
That obscures that.
Yeah.
So what was I born to do is very different from what have I been conditioned to believe my options are.
That's absolutely right.
And until we can break out of that conditioning, or at least become get close up and real with it and understand that we're operating out of it, we don't really have access to that question. And so there is such a crisis of being lost, and such a crisis of personal dignity. And then, it expands out to community dignity and national dignity and... it's a big, big opportunity to reframe where we're looking, from looking out to an introspection, and then
back out again. So as we look inward and we say, what's really important to me? What really is fulfilling? What are the expressions that I've experienced in my life? What are the qualities in various expressions that I found fulfilling in my life that I want to generate more of? That again is the function versus the form. In other words, for me, connection is really important, so that I have a sense of connection, that there's an element of creativity is really important. Fun, we mentioned, that's really important. So I start to orient my life so that I find more conscious expressions of these qualities, and I get very intentional about it.
Well, here's another question, and I'll ask that of you, that helps us drill down below what you're speaking to.
Yeah.
And it's a question that has a lot of juice, particularly in our culture. What is money the best substitute for?
Yeah, that's a really good question. What is money the best substitute
for? Well, in our culture, we've substituted money for a lot of things, in my experience of what I call the culture. Money has replaced God in some ways. I mean, it's this thing that we orient our happiness around, whether I have it or don't have it, which is a distortion. For me, I want my happiness to be reliant on something else that very well may generate plenty of money. I mean, again, my gifts, talents, and abilities, I expect in some way for them to generate money.
Well, we don't wake up every morning and say, boy, I really hope I can generate air.
Right, right.
Although, when I first moved to L.A., years ago, we did wake up and say, I hope we can generate air. So take that back.
But this idea of really, it's a great point, Barnett, this idea of really connecting to what do I want to be the generator of my experience? What do I, and how do I want to express that? I'm still on this way that I think is helpful for folks, that for me, making those distinctions and committing to practices, conscious expressions of these things has been very impactful in my life and has made, and my own work, my own process has been very impactful. Mm-hmm. So programs such as Betty's and others that have helped me really clear out.
Betty is one of the best.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need the best.
Because she is clear.
Go to the best.
And she's a poet.
Mm.
And these are not literal connections that we're making. They are connections of meaning and metaphor.
Yeah.
Even though we think everything is quite literal,
mm-hmm.
It becomes more evident that it's meaning, that it's all meaning and all metaphor. And as we are discovering that we're the authors of it all, that we're the ones that are laying the meanings on stuff.
Absolutely.
And we either do it by ourselves, or we either create meaning for ourselves, or we will buy into the meanings that others lay on for us.
That's it.
So you're either dreaming or you're being dreamed by others. But there's another question. So if it's said that relationships are so difficult, why bother?
Well, they're the for me, it's we talk about this idea of a mirror. The relationships, both my intimate relationships and other relationships, are mirrors. And what I would say about my relationships today is they're very fulfilling. And much of the struggle from the past is subsided.
And what is the quality of fulfillment that is the pot of gold at the end of the relationship rainbow?
It's a level of honesty and a level of transparency.
Which produces what feelings in you?
For me, it's to see and be seen, to experience other as a part of me that I can sort of expand into and have more of. And my marriage, my friendship with you are both, and others are very expansive places in my life. And that's, I'm really grateful for that. And that is what much of the work around developing the tools, what Betty was talking about earlier, the observer and the tracking devices, so we can really own what's showing up for us. That in my relationships makes me more trustworthy and reliable to myself and others.
So when I hear you say that,
mm-hmm.
that it, when I hear you say that, it makes you feel seen and connected. I can feel that in my body. It feels like if this was a treasure map, it would be great. Dig here.
That's right.
Everybody bring shovels. Dig here. That's the treasure.
And there's an evolutionary element, too.
There is an evolutionary element.
Expansing.
Now I'm only talking personally.
Okay.
From inside out, I feel the excitement of that. It's a feeling. It's not a thought. And I don't feel that as a concept. I feel it in my body.
I get it.
And what I'm after...
Yeah, what are you after?
What I'm after is a feeling, not an idea.
Yeah.
I'm not after the map. I'm after the treasure.
I get it.
So when you say that, I think it clarified for me, because I constantly go off. I constantly get I get all involved with the map. It reoriented me in that moment to the treasure. You said, I want to be seen. I want to be known. And in that moment, I can feel in my body where tension is. I can feel it being more expansive. I can feel a sense of ease. There is a felt sense, a felt experience that is like a Geiger counter. It's not radioactive. It's like the love counter. I think that is what we're all looking for. That is why we bother.
Yeah, of course.
That is the treasure. That is what we seek in the mirror that we are for each other. Connection and meaning as a felt sense experience.
Yeah. You know what I love? I was going to say about this expansive quality too. There are people I feel like I can go on an adventure with. That they're reliable enough that we can venture out and learn something together and grow together. And that's really exciting for me. My wife and I are always doing that. We're constantly, you know, coming up with something that sort of is a little outside of our comfort zone because, you know, it's almost like we're thrill seekers. We're not. We're kind of like, well, maybe we are too, but it's a growth seeker. Like, what would be a cool way to grow our relationship? So now we're into salsa. I mean, we haven't started yet, but that's our next venture. As simple as that, because there's a part of me that's like, wow, could we do that? And Jasmine, of course, marathons and triathlons and all these things she embarks upon, but some of them we embark upon, deciding to commit to yoga 3.5 years ago. We're on a bit of a nutrition thing where we're exploring that. I love that about our lives, is that we're conscious enough not to stagnate and just to get comfortable. We're always kind of pushing. And my friendship with you, we're always pushing a little. There's always something new. You've always got some crazy idea. Let's go do this. And that's wonderful, you know? So there's a lot of qualities that are really in alignment, let's say, with what I want in my life. I want more of that. I want more fun. I want more excitement. I want to learn. I want to grow. I want trustworthy people around me. I want to be able to trust myself and them. That to me is a rich and fulfilling experience.
So that
I can express this thing that is me. And others can express this thing that is them. I mean, there's nothing more enjoyable. When you speak about Betty, the way that you enjoy her poetry, that's such a wonderful reflection back to her.
I enjoy her.
Yeah.
And I enjoy you, and I enjoy doing the show.
Yeah.
It allows me to feel a kind of aliveness that I prefer to the aliveness of pain, of struggle, I prefer it. They are both a sense of aliveness.
I get it.
But I'm developing the mastery of being able to choose. If I step into the shower, I can either hit the tap for hot or I can hit the tap for cold. And I can hit them both at the same time and blend them so it's
that's the
comfy,
analogy.
Comfy. And I want to develop the equivalent mastery around my energy states.
That's fantastic.
The quality of feelings that I experience, and a piece of it is an ownership of how I am bringing the past conditioning, the hand-me-downs, in order to interpret basically neutral energy. When I interpret that neutral energy through the lenses of my hand-me-down thinking, it is very often being dragged over razor wire. if I become more and more skilled and aware that this is not my thinking, that these are assumptions that I'm taking for granted and that I can question them and maybe opt out and choose something else, I have become more and more adept at choosing the mix that I want. Hot, a little hot, a little too hot, a little less hot, a little more cool. That's where I want to go.
I love it. And with that, we get to go, because that's what happens when we come to the end of a show. We
are how it works. You get to the end, you have to leave.
That's what happens.
We are leaving, but we will be back here next week.
Of course.
And so we look forward to that. Freeman, yeah. I will see you in the parking lot.
And all of you listening, we hope to see you soon. Thanks for listening.